Hi everyone. Just before we get started on today's episode, I wanted to share with you the special discount code I have created for Neurodiversity Celebration Week this week. So we've got 20% off all resources if you use the code NDWEEK20. That's NDWEEK20 and that's numbers. You'll be able to access all my resources, including my brand new nervous system regulation 4-part course. You've got that on Karma Days, the audio course, all my one-off workshops. I've also got lots of free resources as well. I've just uploaded a brand new ADHD calming and regulating EFT video, which you can download right now. It's about 5 or 7 minutes long, and it teaches you how to use EFT to help calm and regulate right in the moment when you're feeling quite panicky or dysregulated. Head to my website, you'll find any resource, you know, from hormones to RSD, to anxiety, to stepping into your power, to really tapping into those ADHD strengths. I'm trying to build this resource library for you. So if you are on this journey of self-discovery, if you're waiting a diagnosis, or you've just had a diagnosis and you're feeling lost, you've had the diagnosis and you're just kind of like, now what? I'm creating these resources so you are able to tap in, get the help, the support, the handholding that at the moment we're not getting from lots of the services, especially here in the UK. So head to my website, which is adhdwomenswellbeing.co.uk. We've got the code NDWEEK20, and we've also got lots of free resources. So let's hear today's episode. Welcome to the ADHD Women's Wellbeing Podcast. I'm Kate Moore Youssef, and I'm a wellbeing and lifestyle coach, EFT practitioner, mum to 4 kids, and passionate about helping more women to understand and accept their amazing ADHD brains. After speaking to many women just like me, and probably you, I know there is a need for more health and lifestyle support for women newly diagnosed with ADHD. In these conversations, you'll learn from insightful guests, hear new findings, and discover powerful perspectives and lifestyle tools to enable you to live your most fulfilled, calm, and purposeful life wherever you are on your ADHD journey. Here's today's episode. Today, we're talking about something I hear a huge amount, and that is migraines. I've sort of mentioned on the podcast before, but we've not delved into it and really understood. And I brought in an amazing expert who helps us understand why migraines may be more significant, I think, for the ADHD community, especially in women. So I want to welcome Diane Ducarme, and she is an expert in migraines, a specialist. She's a contemporary master of migraine investigation. And her unique approach combines the ancient wisdom of traditional Chinese medicine, which you'll hear in today's conversation, with cutting-edge technology to unearth the intricate root causes of migraines weaving on top of genetics. Diane's relentless, inquisitive mind for highly complex problems is what allows her to deliver these life-transforming results, which is fuel to her energy. And you'll hear from this conversation her passion, her knowledge. It's fascinating, the background as well. I can't wait to share this episode with you. So if anybody has gone through this their whole life and not quite understood where these migraines may manifest and be able to connect the dots between migraines and ADHD, this is definitely the episode for you. I'm going to put all her details in the show notes as well. And she's also got a fantastic podcast because she's so dedicated to unraveling these mysteries of migraines. So her podcast is Migraine Heroes, and her company is called Nectar Health, which is at the forefront of this remarkable journey towards migraine relief and wellness. Let's hear today's podcast. So Diane, welcome to the podcast. It's delightful to have you here. I've really been looking forward to this. I'm so keen to have this conversation because I know so many women who I work with, speak to in the community, but also vitally, they listen to this podcast and they can relate so much to suffering with migraines. So I wanted to be able to bring you on because I know that you work with a lot of clients, patients with ADHD. Mm-hmm. So are you able to explain a little bit about what you're seeing in your practice, in your clinic, with the clients that are coming in with ADHD and migraines? And I guess how these migraines have been presenting so people can understand that they are not on their own.
Absolutely. So a lot of people who have ADHD and migraines is actually a type of migraine that can start the earliest. So this is one rare type that can start in childhood. So it's 18% of women have migraines, but it's only 5% of girls, boys and girls. And when a boy or a girl starts to have migraine really early in their childhood, usually it's a precursor to ADHD. It doesn't mean they have ADHD yet. It means that the system underlying the ADHD in their gut-brain axis started to get out of balance, and the body is noticing and sending a fire alarm.
So what do you do with regards to migraines? Like, what would you normally, you know, someone's coming to you with migraines, ADHD-related migraines, what would be the sort of the course of action that you would begin?
Yeah. So I serve people worldwide. I'm based in New Zealand, but I serve people in all continents, literally. And I do that by first asking a questionnaire of 97 questions that will map together all of the symptoms going on. So people will come to me for migraines, which are absolutely debilitating. And they're so debilitating and so omnipresent and controlling their life that they almost forget how much else is going on. And so what I'm doing is I'm asking the body, okay, what do you have to say? What do you want to complain about? Where does it hurt? And so we talk about, it can be like tingling sensation, numbness in the arms, ability to not falling asleep, waking up at night. It can also be having very painful menstruation, having a lot of clots in menstruation. Like, what are all of the symptoms going on? And from there, then I meet with them on Zoom, and I have an hour up to 3 hours conversation to just map and explain to them, this is what is going on in your body, and this is the domino effect, and why over life all of these imbalances built up. And then that person in that moment, it can be a mother with her daughter, it can be a man, it can be a grandma, like, they start to understand most of the time for the first time, after they've seen a lot of neurologists and a lot of MRI and a lot of GPs and a lot of medications, sometimes 40 years of medications, they're like, oh my God, finally, I understand what's going on. And then what I do is I put things on an app and I add foods. I'm not trying to emphasize their triggers. They know they have triggers. I just inform them of them in case they missed a few. And we'll talk about some triggers for ADHD, by the way, you might be surprised about. And so I'm just adding the foods and I'm repairing two systems at a time. And if that woman has migraines and ADHD, then we will work on the stomach spleen system, because usually it will be broken, and we'll work directly on it. But there's two other pathways that we can take. We can also work on the liver and on dampness, but you know, we'll go into those details maybe later.
Okay. So what age would you say? And I know we talk about headaches, but a migraine is different. I know when you're a migraine sufferer, it's like a headache's like a scrape, and a migraine is like a severe, like catastrophic bang.
Yes.
What age typically do these migraines start?
They can start any age. For most people, they will start, for most women, they will start around puberty. So in childhood, it's 5% of boys and girls because it's a genetic predisposition. And then the incidence is going to triple to quadruple for women at puberty. But it can start also later in life, up until I've seen women having their first migraines around 40. So because there's 1 to 40 genes lucky responsible for migraines, the genetic intensity on people is different. And then how much they've pushed themselves in life is also different. And so usually the migraine will come as, like you said, something absolutely debilitating. So really incapacitating them to work, to socialize, to participate in life. They're not dying, but they're also not living. So it's a horrendous condition that's going to put people ridden in bed for days and having to give up a lot of their situation is very, very hard to go by. And sometimes when I can see in people their root causes for migraines and for ADHD is exactly the same. And this is what I'd love to, you know, engage with you on today.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that, because I'm already starting to think about certain people I know who've suffered continuously with migraines and what I suspect. What I notice is definitely a nervous system dysregulation going on. Mm-hmm. But what I would love to ask you is, like, what are you noticing those root causes with ADHD and migraines?
So let's start with three pools of people that did their analysis on this topic. There's traditional Chinese medicine doctors, Western scientists, and children. Let's start with the Westerners. In Western science, we know about the gut-brain axis now for about 15 years, and we're passionate about it, and we realize how important that axis is. And it was quite revolutionary because we always thought the brain was commanding everything. And now we were realizing, okay, hold on, turns out I have neurons in my gut too. Now, this was on the back of finding the vagus nerve in 1872, which is this massive tree, you're referring to nerves, this massive tree in my body that is going to plant its root around each of my organs inside my thorax, going to plant it around my stomach, which we're going to talk about, it's super important, around my liver, around my small and large intestine. And this massive nerve is going to be the chief of orchestra for the 100 billion nerve cells in my body, and is going to go as a big root along my spine, and they're going to form a trunk in my neck, and it's going to plug into my brain a bit like a Tesla with a lot of mystery. And so from the Western perspective, this is where we get a little bit lost, is how does that massive cable plug into the brain? And so we start to try to do MRI and observe, what is Theo feeling when he has a bit of ADHD? How does his brain manifest? But we do that from an MRI perspective. And so from a Western science perspective, we always thought because of that vagus nerve that it was stubbed down, now we realize it goes both ways. And we understand a lot, but we have a few areas of unknown. Traditional Chinese medicine doctors, for them, the gut-brain axis is really, really old news. And the vagus nerve has the foundation for acupuncture. So very sort of old stuff. And when you tell them, oh, it's cutting edge, they're like, no, it's not. And if you really insist, they're going to say, look, have you looked at your body? How could your brain not be connected to your gut? You know, of course it is. And of course, it's not a starting point and an end point. It needs to circulate. So for them, all of that notion is really, really old, and a notion of a good microbiome. There's a third group of people who did their analysis on the vagus nerve, and these are children. And you have four of them in your household, if I'm not wrong. Have you ever seen one of your child eat an ice cream super fast, slap on their forehead, and go brain freeze?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And so the child is going to make this incredible discovery, which is super relevant to ADHD. He's going to make the discovery that if he or she eats an ice cream super fast and that ice cream lands on their stomach, which technically is down, they're going to feel the frozen of the ice in their forehead. Yeah. And so they're going to make the first connection on their vagus nerve and experience their vagus nerve, you know, sending that frozen signal to their forehead. And in traditional Chinese medicine, the vagus nerve links the stomach spleen exactly to that forehead. And this is the bed for ADHD. So people who suffer from a precursor of ADHD coupled with migraine and then can get exacerbated with life will have more forehead migraines, and they will more have a tendency to vomit when they have a migraine, as opposed to top of the head migraines, temple migraines, behind the head migraines, migraines moving along the trigeminal nerve. So here we're gonna start usually in the forehead and with vomiting.
That's so interesting. So you're saying the forehead and the vomiting type of migraine is more likely to be connected to ADHD?
Yes, more likely to be connected to a system called the stomach spleen in traditional Chinese medicine.
Okay.
And that system is linked to that part of the brain, which is just below the forehead. And that part of the brain allows us to control our thoughts and not go into overthinking mode, not zap too fast, and also allows us to fall asleep easily, but also to muscle easily. So you see, I speak seven languages, and it's almost like I speak two. I speak West, and in West, if you say stomach, you mean that little part that welcomes the food first in your body. That's just what you mean. But if you say Pi Wei in Mandarin, you actually don't mean that. You mean the ability, yes, to have digestive enzymes and to break down your food. But you also mean the ability to focus and concentrate your thoughts, to fall asleep, to digest well, but also to extract really small substances in food to benefit parts of your body in particular. So the ability to be really, really firm in your skin, and also to nourish your kidney system, who is in charge of stress. And so if you have that, get those gastric juices, that stomach's been weak for a number of years, your ability to extract these really fine nutrients is going to be depleted. And over time, your kidney system, who's in charge of many things, namely ovulation, but also stress resilience to really large diseases, is going to, over the years, become depleted. And so the more you're going to have that imbalance of the stomach spleen, which is going to lead over time to ADHD, the more your kidney system is going to be weak, and you're going to be prone to stress. And the more you're going to be prone to stress, the more you will be stressed. The more you will be stressed, the more your kidney system is going to be weak. And the more that kidney system is weak, the more you're stressed. Does that make sense? So there's interdependencies among all different systems. Mm. And this is something that we really fail to understand in our allopathic medicine. Mm. We look at organs like such as if they were forming their own music without, you know, having an orchestra. And so this, once my stomach spleen system is weak, I'm going to have a domino effect that's going to go on in my body that's going to make me have more and more symptoms over time. And so ADHD is going to be one of them. But if it's not addressed properly, and if people don't take the active engagement and learn on your podcast what to do, what is it, etc., and how to circumvent it, how to reverse it, then the domino effect is going to go on. And one of the first dominoes that is going to fall is the kidney system domino, which is in charge of stress management.
Okay. This is fascinating because we normally hear about ADHD with regards to sort of like from a neurological perspective, we think it's only just mm-hmm. happening here in the brain. I've done mm-hmm. quite a few podcast episodes with lots of different specialists who talk now a lot more about nutrition and gut. Mm-hmm. But what you're helping us connect with the Chinese traditional medicine is mm-hmm. the actual organs and how the effects on those organs can, you know, can show up with the ADHD symptoms. So what food, I'm thinking, because mm-hmm. normally we hear a lot of this is what you shouldn't be eating. You know,
yes.
It's like take out gluten, take out sugar, take out caffeine, take out all sorts of different things and dairy. And I'm wondering, what should we be adding? I mean, it's actually really yeah. nice to hear that sometimes yeah. it's not about like restriction. Obviously, everything's moderation. But what are those foods that you suggest that people eat more of?
Absolutely. Before I get into it, I want to add just one to your list, if I may, of restriction, is any sparkling water or carbohydrated drinks. So if you think of the role of the stomach spleen, what is it doing? It's like, it's acting like, imagine a police officer that welcomes the food in the body, and he's mm-hmm. the first port of call for the rest of the digestive tract. And he's going to separate the food into small colored t-shirts. And he's going to say, all of the black t-shirt, you come over here, we're going to nourish the kidney system. All of the red t-shirts come over here, we're going to nourish and increase the blood. All of the blue t-shirts come over here, we're going to go into the liver because you are toxins. All of the yellow t-shirts, you are parasites and allergens, and I'm going to neutralize you. Now, the sparkling water or carbohydrate drinks, they're going to lift the energy up and not down. And they're going to start to really mess up with that first port of call. So if you drink sparkling water every single day instead of, you know, water, this is maybe the first, you know, change you can make. And don't go cold turkey, just ease into it. And little by little go towards just water, and same for carbohydrate drinks. So I'll just mention that one in passing. Now, what can you add? I think there's a lot of books that are, first of all, written on sleep, on why it's so important to sleep. And I think another book could be written that has never been written is like, why is it important to masticate? Throughout evolution, the teeth are really part of, you know, and they change as we grow, and they've evolved over the years depending on what we eat. If you look at any animal, you can tell what they eat by their teeth. Mm-hmm. Mastication is really important. And so the first part to make the job.
If people don't know what that means, it means chewing. Yes, that's right.
Chewing. Yes. Sorry. Apologize.
That's okay.
I'm a French speaker. and so the first, like before we even go into what to add, is like the chewing is going to be really important to help the police officer do a really thorough job. Then the temperature of the food is also important. Those digestive enzymes, that police officer, he needs energy. And so if I'm going to eat really icy foods or icy water, I damage him. I prevent him from doing his job. And we're going to talk about why it's a really big problem if that happens, or a compounding problem, a problem that becomes bigger and bigger. And so masticating. So therefore, a smoothie, what is a smoothie? A really complex one. Is one where we blended a lot of different foods, and it's gonna, and they're arbitrarily packed into, maybe there's a two red t-shirts with a black, and there's one blue with two yellow, and there's no mastication. So the tongue, which is a sensory organ that sends to the brain what food is arriving, so that the brain can send the right gastric juices and the right police officers to the stomach spleen, is impaired. And so all of that process is going to be really important. Then in terms of food specifically, it's really, really, really what, not what you would expect necessarily. Starches are actually a bit important. I'm not talking about gluten, but for example, millet. If we talk about millet, you know, we say one apple a day keeps the doctor away. Well, they have millet as their staple food. It's really part of their day-to-day. And so millet has massive number of nutrients and nutrients and vitamins, and has the ability to be digested, is going to be forced to go through a police officer. Now, if I eat a fiber only, the fiber makes my digestive enzyme redundant, because the fiber doesn't really get digested. It goes through. Does that make sense? So that's why we like fiber, because the more we're constipated, especially if we have ADHD later in life, we tend to be constipated, so we tend to eat a lot of fibers. The fiber goes through. It makes the police officer, no, I don't need your help. We're good here. I don't need to be digested. I'm just passing by. And so the more we're going to eat these really important fibers, the more we're making that police officer redundant. So good quality starch is actually helpful to give a job and to stimulate the production of digestive enzyme. Now, the king of all preparation is, I don't know if you've ever seen a white rice and millet congee. You know, it's a preparation where you have half rice, half millet that is soaked into water, and then it's cooked with too much water and makes kind of like a mushy form of whitish, yeah. Not very appetizing for a Western person. I'm going to try to make it appetizing in a few minutes. And that is a load that will only be digested by producing digestive enzymes. And so with that, you can completely reboost the stomach spleen system and completely address ADHD for breakfast. Anything you have for breakfast counts double, because you break the fast, you're arriving on an empty gut. So when you have these, you're going to do the exact opposite as a fiber. You're going to say, dear police officer, I love you so much. Good morning. Get going. We're going to work today. And so when you see that woman that she can eat everything she wants and she never puts on weight, well, she has a really good police officer. And so by having really good starch that are well prepared, well masticated, and well hydrated, I'm going to boost the number of digestive enzymes. Now, let's imagine I do the opposite. I have ice cream. In ice cream, I have dairy, which is sweet and which is cold. I damage my police officer. Mm. Is that a big deal? No, it's not a big deal, as long as it's not too recurrent. Do you see what I mean? And so here I'm going to have two foods, and one is going to damage it, and one is going to promote it. Okay. And so in my biome, because it's such a population of that, you know, embraces diversity, for my big brain, I need diversity. And so therefore, it's okay to have a bit of naughty stuff, as long as you have some good stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So you're noticing, by adding something like the millet and the congee.
Yes, of congee. White rice and millet.
Yeah. So you're noticing, and that, could that help reduce the amount of migraines just by adding that to your diet?
Absolutely. So if you take a child, especially if you take a child, there's not 1,000 reasons why a child can have migraines. And I really implore, because, you know, you know, when you start in life and you have migraines, and you have no choice but to medicate, and you go to the nursery every day and you receive medication, you're going to damage your organ liver and your system liver massively, leading to many more migraines in your life. And so here, if you have a child with ADHD and migraines, or just ADHD, quite frankly, you can give them a bit of Kangji. And the way I negotiated with my kids is once a week, and afterwards you can have whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Because I'm just about saying, hey, let's just fire up that police officer. And then let's still keep the pleasure in. Yeah. And so it's a small bowl. It's really not, you know, there's not a lot of taste. It's quite bland. It's just, you know, warming up that friend and saying, hey, you know, please be by my side for this week. We're going to be good and we're going to be naughty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so how do you make it palatable?
My favorite way is to add peanuts, like real fresh peanuts that I roast with a bit of salt and pepper. And then I find it just makes it a bit more crunchy. It adds a bit of texture. We're not used to a slimy texture. You can also add a bit of meat. I would not necessarily add sugar. Like, people are tempted to add sugar or honey. I would try to refrain from that and maybe keep it savory. I think that would be better. Okay. And if you're a woman and you also want a bit of extra collagen, then for rice, you take glutinous rice, and that's going to give you that extra collagen very naturally. That is going to also be absorbed quite easily by your body.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, again, I'm sort of thinking about the different people. I don't suffer from migraines, but what I did suffer from a lot was what I would call very hormonal headaches. And so a few days before my period, I would get an absolutely excruciating headache. But I've never called it a migraine before because I've never felt sick. I've never had like the where I can't see properly. And when my friends have talked about their migraines, there's like, there's no way I can call that a migraine because I would take very strong medication and go to sleep. Mm-hmm. But and it would only happen probably once or twice a month maximum. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm on HRT, I don't get that at all. I don't get these hormonal headaches. So for me, that was like, oh, it was... along with the other things that it's helped sort, it's not, I don't get these headaches. However, my daughter, my eldest daughter, has suffered with migraines. And she, it's more on my husband's side of the family, they have a lot of migraines, like her cousins and my mother-in-law. And when she's had migraines, she's just had to, I've had to pick her up from school. She's had to miss quite a lot of school. She's had to go to bed. And I see there's a pattern, definitely hormonal. She's been diagnosed with ADHD, and it's typically around if she's a bit more stressed or a bit more anxious. It doesn't have to be a huge amount of overwhelm. It's the combination of hormones and maybe slight pressure, external pressure going on, and then that's it. And it's,
absolutely. And maybe I can give a bit of color on what you were feeling, which is different to what she's feeling. But I just want to start on you, because that type of migraine was related to some extent to ADHD. So just below the stomach spleen system, you have another system, which is super important, is your liver system. Now, the liver system is going to manage. So if I say liver again in the Western language, I always designate that piece of flesh just sitting below my right rib cage. But if I say liver gan in Chinese, what I'm referring to is my liver, my gallbladder, a lot of my brain. We're not in the forehead anymore. We're in the temple. We're in the top of the head. We're across the eyebrows. I'm going to refer to all of my female hormones, my mood hormones, my uterus, my breast, and all of my tendons. And so before, leading up to my menstruation is a time when women can have a lot of excruciating migraines, right? It's probably statistically the highest amount. And what happens is that before the menstruation, the blood's going to gather in the liver before it gets flushed. And so all of the toxins are accumulating. Now, what we do know from the West, even we don't know exactly how the vagus nerve plugs into the brain, like with a lot of precision, we do know that if I intoxicate my brain with alcohol, I get a hangover. And that's universal. So if I get a hangover, I feel in my brain, I'm not doing a brain freeze. I'm like going like, oh, like with a helmet on my hands, on my head, thinking, oh my God, it hurts almost everywhere. Now, if I'm before my menstruation and all of those toxins are gathered before they get flushed in my menstruation, I also have that inflammation around my liver system, then that inflammation is going through my vagus nerve and has two ends inflamed, one in my brain and one in my liver. Yeah. And so that at that moment, I can get that. Now, if I have my liver who has intoxication or inflammation, what it's going to do is that the gallbladder is going to put bile up. And so instead of the juice and the food going down, now the bile is going up and it's going to go up and annoy the stomach spleen and change the pH of that chemical, that beautiful chemical reaction that needs to happen. And that's going to weaken my stomach spleen system, which is going to increase ADHD-like symptoms or that for that matter. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's the interrelation of both. And this is where it can also start from another place.
So many women are listening to this podcast now and are getting these light bulb moments, are able to connect the dots through our conversations, but then left helpless because the expertise, the specialism isn't there. What would you say to women who are getting these realizations now and they've suffered for decades of their life?
You know, like your intuition is always right. And also your body is a really smart system.
Yeah.
So each time it took a different turn, it was in order to protect you. And it was rational. When the body has a problem, it's going to try to disperse the problem and make it very small in many places. It's going to prefer to have a lot of small problems than a really, really big one. If it has a really, really big one in a single place, it can't function anymore. So I'd love to take the example of the endometriosis. And when I speak with people, I still onboard everyone. And sometimes, yes, it takes me 3 hours to explain to someone how the body, you know, why are we here, why we are here. But let me, and I really want to link endometriosis and ADHD for a minute, because I don't think that's a link that has ever been established. And I also want to talk about antibiotics now, because I'm sure that also, you know, has never been linked, but I want to link it too. So if your stomach spleen is not functioning, the food still goes down. Yeah? So it still goes down. So it goes down. I don't know if your kids want to save the planet and they also want to play with slime. I don't know about yours. That's what mine want to do.
Yeah.
I'm like, if you want to save the planet, stop like making a mess in my kitchen that I can't, you know, put in the organic bin. Okay. So your food is going to go down in your microbiome, in your small and large intestine, and it's going to look like slime. And your small intestine might go, "Mayday, mayday, what's this? We have red t-shirts which we need to extract. We've lost a lot of blood during menstruation. We need to replenish. We have a lot of black t-shirts and we've been really stressed. We need to extract it." But it's all mushy and mixed with blue t-shirts that are toxins. It hasn't been properly digested. And oh my God, there's a parasite. And so it's going to have a couple of ways to cope. One way is flush this, mayday, get it out. So then we're going to start to have what is called a leaky gut. So I'm going to eat something and immediately the food goes, okay? And that's going to be very problematic because I'm not absorbing any of my food and I'm retaining water. And so my microbiome starts to be more and more damp, okay? Or I can sometimes get really constipated because the body is like, what do we do? Oof. Yeah, put it on the side. It might always serve one day, but we're going to try to extract that stuff, but it's really hard. And so regardless of those two pathways that the body decides to take, there's going to be a lot of what is called dampness. So dampness, imagine mucus, imagine phlegm that is going to go inside the gut and it's going to start to permeate through the lining of the gut and start to get to the endometrium. And it's going to surround the endometrium and it's going to start to really annoy it. The body, why does that? It's just because it's trying to spread the problem. There's a problem and he's trying not to have it concentrated too much. Otherwise, it becomes a bit dangerous. Yeah. And so it's going to start to put it under the end, around the endometrium. And if you've ever seen what an operation is, when the doctor operates from an endometriosis, he's going to go through your belly button to respectfully not scar you. And then it's going to take almost a spoon and scoop out mucus. When he does that, because the body is not flat, he's going to need to cut a little bit, very small vessels to go around it. But when he does that, he makes the whole part of that body weaker. So that, yes, maybe I get really lucky and I can get pregnant on the back of such an operation. But if I, but afterwards, that region is so weak that more mucus can accumulate easily. Yeah. And the body can't defend itself as much. And so the more that biome is going to be bad, the more my digestive enzymes have no choice to get back on their feet. So it's a little bit that the police officer let a few gangsters, a few, you know, people inside the gut. Then they, these guys replicated because that's what they do. And then there's a bit of a gang organized in my microbiome. And the gang now is taking over the police, which is upstream. And so then I get into that really vicious circle where I'm bloated, I have a distension of the belly area, I can easily have eczema, or I have athlete foot, or I can have repetitive UTIs. If I have repetitive UTIs, I'm going to take antibiotics. If I take antibiotics, which I have to, it's going to make my biome even weaker, and it's going to make my stomach even weaker, and therefore my ADHD even stronger.
Yeah.
And so I just want to link these things, because you mentioned these women, they're going to complain about that. And it's so true. And they go into a vicious circle from which it's really, really, really hard to get out of. And so I want to express, first of all, like that in my life, I had a really successful career until 5 years ago when I decided to stop it. I made these discoveries, you know, for people who were suffering lifelong journeys of migraines by coincidence because of my uncle who died from a brain tumor. And I stopped earning my life, and I've dedicated that massive purpose to women's health in particular, but to people's health, because I think we're really headed in the wrong direction here. And so every penny I've made, I've reinvested and completely bootstrapped the app that I now have. And that allows me to help people faster with a lot of accuracy and just adding foods to their diet. And so rediversifying their gut flora, essentially, so that they can thrive and go on and do the small and large things that they want to accomplish in life, which is sometimes just being a loving mom present for her child when he comes back from school, you know? And yeah. These things really, really matter in society.
Yeah, wow. I was going to ask you the question of where this kind of passion came from, this kind of purpose. So 5 years ago, you were already working in the health industry. You were already doing this, or
I studied at Harvard Business School. I have an engineering background, and I worked as a management consultant for many years. And so I was more in boardrooms and CEO rooms and other things like that. But I had had a skiing accident myself. I had lost half of my blood and shrunk a kidney and had never been transfused. And it took me 12 years to get over it fully. And when I got over it fully was when I met a traditional Chinese medicine doctor who recommended foods for 3 weeks. And I was back to who I was when I was 17 before that accident. And I really thought, oh my God, like, why are we struggling so much? What's wrong with the system? And my colleague said, it's placebo. And I'm like, and I really thought to myself, guys, this has nothing to do with placebo. We're way beyond placebo here. It's extremely efficient. And they said, no, pharmaceutical company looked into it. There's nothing. And I kept on bringing people to that same doctor with whom I work, and he supported me throughout this journey, and she kept on pulling miracles off. And then I thought, oh, I'd love to create a food as medicine AI or something that people can have in their pocket and is really simple. And this is what I fabricated today. But I thought it was impossible, and I had this massive imposter syndrome, and then my family would have, you know, they didn't like that I would change career. Like, you know, my parents, they were like, you're going back to medical school, right? I'm like, no, I think there's a lot of gaps in our medicine. And I want to fill those gaps because people are really suffering. And I think when I met a lot of women who were suffering from migraines, I fell in compassionate love with how much pain these women were experiencing and were living in the shadows for years and years and years of their life. And I thought, oh my God, these stories are crazy. I would listen to people and really think, oh my God. And so I started to do a podcast called Migraine Heroes. And I thought, you know, maybe no one's interested in these stories, but I don't know, I'll give it a go because I think they need a voice. And women love it. People love it. You know, I even just onboard someone in Australia, a man, and he said, oh my God, I have so much in common with all of these people. Turned out to be women. And because the, you know, how constrained their life has been is just disgraceful. It's great that we aim to go on Mars. It's not okay that we let, you know, so many of the people that are in touch with you suffer so much. I don't think it's okay. It's not okay with me.
No, it's not okay with me either. And I have to say, you know, I think doctors do an amazing job. Western doctors do an amazing job in situations, but there's too many gaps now. There's just too many gaps going on that I'm noticing, and I have no medical background. And I'm speaking to doctors and filling them in and saying, this is what I'm hearing on the ground. And this is what women are saying to me. And they're not feeling supported, and they're not feeling looked after, and they don't know where to go. And there's nowhere to go where people are making those connections of the neurodivergence, nervous system, and gut health, and all of that. So I think what you're doing is incredible. I wanted to ask you a question with regards to women, that there's a much higher propensity for women to have migraines. And also what we notice with things like autoimmune conditions, that more women get them, and how we are seeing the diagnoses of women much later on in life with neurodivergence, with autism and ADHD, that women have had to go through their lives masking, hiding, suppressing, going through cycles of burnout, dysregulation, nervous system, constant, you know, on heightened alert. They've not been able to be their true, authentic selves. They have had to hide under overwhelm, pressure, just so many mental health problems. And these women are just clinging on for dear life. Then they get these diagnoses, like I say, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s. And they are battling these lots of what we consider physical, you know, issues such as the gut, such as migraines, endometriosis. What are you seeing the same? And do you see this as a almost like a societal way that women have had to sort of suppress themselves, and women have not been given a voice, and medically women haven't been listened to and dismissed?
Absolutely. I have so many things to say about that. So I completely agree. Everything that you see, I see everything. And I think what keeps me going days in and days out is the miracles that we make day by day. And that's just the fuel, you know, for not going for shopping for clothing and just thinking that it's a life of purpose. And it's just so joyful. Now, a few things. Number one, you know, you have four children. You have produced four brains, four hearts, four full skin flesh, four pair of eyes, four livers, okay? Four stomach spleens. You have produced all of that. The contribution of your partner was a lot more modest, was indispensable. But a man is going to produce spermatozoid, which is really, really important. Don't get me wrong. It's also very simple. The woman is going to make the full child. So let's imagine the man is a factory and the woman is a factory. Which factory do you think is more complex? And by a factor of how much, right? So you have this joke sometimes circulating on the web, like a man's brain and there's a button on, off, and the woman's brain, there's all sorts of regulators. That's a reflection of reality. We are really, really, really sophisticated human beings. Now, as a woman, because we developed these medications, what happened is in the 60s, I don't know if you've ever heard of that medication, thalidomide.
Yes, of course.
Yes. So in the 60s, it was this medication done actually for nausea in pregnancy. So sort of migraines, soft migraines in pregnancy. And as a result of that, there were more than 10,000 children born without a limb or without limbs. So without a full arm or two legs, etc., which provided, as you can imagine, a complete catastrophe and trauma, not only for these children and for these mothers and the guilt that they brought up together, but also for the scientific community that, you know, for the right reasons and for loving reasons said, oh my God, take women out of clinical trials. This is actually really, really dangerous. They might be pregnant. If they're not, they might become pregnant, or they might not know they are. And so this is really dangerous for society. So it's for really well-intended reasons that we removed very brutally women from clinical trials for decades. Okay. Now, lab rats also tend to be male rats because there's a lot of data from female rats that are unexplainable. And I think the brain of a woman is also very, has a lot of empathy. And I want to tell you a story. It was a story of the first woman it happened with was a woman who, she was she had migraines for 30 years and her migraines were going down. And at some point they really climbed up. And I look at her data, I can't understand it. I look at her food, I'm like, did I make any mistakes? I can't understand why the pain is suddenly spiking back up. And so I call her and I say, what's the context? What's going on? And then she said, my daughter tried to commit suicide. And this was the least thing I was expecting. And so what I try to mean is, as her daughter was in pain, the mother felt the pain. So it adds to the complexity of the system, because the Chinese are going to say, not only is your gut-brain axis connected, your emotions can also impact your gut and your organs, and your organs can impact your emotions. So that makes the woman hyper-complicated. Now, if you look at the medicine, ancestral medicine, the women were able to reproduce the population, a healthy population. And so they were front and center of medicine. So whereas in Western science, because of the way we do the science and because we want a one-to-one relationship and causality, something very clean, very neat, very scientific-based, the way we do our clinical trials, we had to exclude women. And there's a lot of variables that we're unable to explain in these traditional Chinese medicines, such as Ayurveda or Chinese medicine or Kampo that was developed by the Japanese. Women were front and center of medicine. When you say health in Mandarin, the character is a woman under a roof. And health means if you provide security for the woman, you have provided health, and also means safety. And therefore, you have kept your population safe. And I think that's something we've completely lost in Western science, because there's so many symptoms that we can't explain because we don't understand systems, because our language is also very directional. Like when we say heart, we can only mean heart. And when we say liver, we can only mean liver. We struggle to express ourselves with systems. Even when we say IBS or leaky gut, we designate the gut or the bowels as the problem. But the problem doesn't come from them. They're on the receiving end of another system not doing their job. But because we call them that way, we sometimes tend to look at in the wrong place. And so, yes, I do feel what you feel. Women are completely misguided, gaslit, etc. And I think what happens in that first onboarding call is they really feel, oh my God, now I completely understand. That is so logical. I'm making sense. Yeah. And so from there, they have that massive hope that it's actually everything's sort of reversible if you take it one at a time.
Yeah.
And so that conversation is really a symbolic $30 in the sense that I need people to show up. I have children, I have a husband, I have a household. I can't have people not showing up. But I give the money back if people join or don't join. It's really not about the money. It's about people understanding, okay, I'm not crazy. I'm making sense. And there's a way forward.
So then where does the app come in? So you have the onboarding call. And then are they then given the opportunity to use the app as guidance?
What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to make their life really, really easy. Mm. I bet the people who are listening here, they're really busy. They have to cook for their children and fold the laundry and do the grocery shopping and cook it, you know, life and work. Life is extremely busy. So my part of my job is to make it very simple and very actionable. And so the best way to access someone on a daily basis is through an app. And so in that app, there's two selections of foods, and it's going to tell the given person, for example, hey, Kate, in your selection A, we're going to boost your gastric juices, increase the number of digestive enzymes that you have. In your selection B, we are going to nourish your kidney system to overcome that anxiety that you experience. And these are all of the symptoms that you experience, how your body manifested this, which is a combination of a bit of genetics, a bit of epiDNA, you know, what went wrong along the way, and how it's manifested for you. And these are all of the foods that will do the job. And then there's, you know, over 5 years, I realized you have to do things in a certain order. There are
and that order is going to differ person by person. You have to take, it's a bit like you unpeel an onion. You can't start by peel five or six. You have to start by peel one or two. And then what I've done is in the app, there's also a tongue image AI. So your tongue is your only internal organ that you can see externally. And it's a gem of information because it's connected to your vagus nerve. And so it's a little bit like it's a mirror of what's happening in your brain, what's happening in your main organs. And so you could give me 10 tongues, Kate, and I would actually be able to tell you who are the three people with ADHD from just looking at that.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
It's incredible. And what it allows me to do is not only know where to start, so where's your body crying the most, and then it allows me to see how fast your gut is absorbing the foods. How well is it doing the job? Where is it putting the food? I'm giving it food, you know, is it put in the right place at the right speed? And then this is where women will have less and less migraines, but they will also say, I just had one yesterday, and she said, oh my God, she had received 3 rounds of IVF. She was about to do a 4th one when I met her. And I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. Your body is crying left, right, and center. These are all of the reasons why your body does not want to get pregnant. Very rightfully so. Let's correct all of that. And so yesterday she was texting and she said, oh my God, I've had my first, what I think is a normal menstruation, and feels amazing. It was smooth. The blood was red. It was just gorgeous. And at the same time, I had another woman from the US texting me and said, you know, I expelled so many blood clots in the last few days, some of which were the size of a baseball. And she wrote that. And, you know, I had that moment of, oh my God, we just dodged a bullet, you know? Like, this stuff couldn't stay in her body. And so her migraines were rightfully, during her menstruation, complaining about something happening internally. And so if, you know, you're left with only one message, it's just your body is a beautiful machine. It's wired to reproduce, and it's wired to love and do these incredible things and to learn and to love. And when it's struggling, it's going to do its best to cope. You know, so it's your best friend, and listen, and don't let sort of paper documents with a lot of data come in between you and your body. Use your intuition too.
Yeah. So if someone's listening to this now and they may not suffer from migraines, but they suffer from heavy periods, they suspected endometriosis, maybe they've not had the diagnosis, you know, PMDD, anything sort of like hormonal, do you still do that, or is you specifically migraines?
I can still do that. I in practice, I'm really focusing on migraines. However, migraine is a genetic fire alarm. So it's completely possible to do the same for someone who doesn't suffer from migraines, yes.
Okay. Well, yeah. I think, you know, this conversation alone is going to help a lot of people. Just that knowledge, maybe they can find themselves a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner near them and they can get some, you know, some advice, or they can speak to you. And I'm going to be sharing all your information on the show notes, but can you just tell people what's the website called that they can get in touch with you through?
So the website is called My Nectar Health, nectar like the plant, the flower. And you go on the website and you can take the test. We are also putting together a triggers test just to, you know, help people with triggers already, because sometimes there's stuff that they haven't really thought about. And and then from there we meet. You can also just contact me from the website if you have a question, exactly like you have something really specific and you're not sure if I can help. I'll reply very candidly, and I would be the one replying. And I really care. I think it's not okay what's happening. It's really not okay, neither for us nor for our children. And so I really want to thank you for the platform that you allow, you know, to give a voice to those women and, you know, to educate them so that they can feel empowered to take care of their health.
Yeah, thank you. And that is exactly what this podcast is for women who haven't got access to all these different, you know, specialists and experts, and if they can have a conversation and do some digging themselves and maybe, you know, speak to you or find someone locally to them, it just helps. It just helps with that validation that I think is so important to know that it's not within our minds, and actually it's not okay to suffer. It's not okay to be in pain and to live a terrible quality of life because of our health. So thank you so much this amazing conversation, Diane.
Thank you.
I really hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you did and it resonated with you, I would absolutely love it if you could share on your platforms or maybe leave a review and a rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please do check out my website, adhdwomenswellbeing.co.uk, for lots of free resources and paid for workshops. I'm uploading new things all the time and I would absolutely love to see you there. Take care and see you for the next episode.